From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The number two position of power in the Illinois House of Representatives is called the Majority Leader. It's second only to the Speaker. And since 2019, that position has been held by State Representative Greg Harris. He's a Democrat from Chicago and is also both an openly gay and openly HIV-positive legislator. This is not going to be our usual interview with a leading Illinois politician. I promise there will be no mentions of fiscal years or infrastructure or clean energy. As important as those issues are, I wanted to speak with Harris about his life and career. This is, after all, Pride Month, and given that he was born in 1955, Harris has lived through a number of remarkable changes in the way members of the LGBT community exist in America, from an era of the closet and criminalization to Stonewall and the AIDS pandemic, up through civil rights, civil unions, and marriage equality. Harris was a key player in those last two fights, sponsoring the legislation that brought civil unions and same-sex marriage to Illinois. I spoke with Harris last week in his office on the third floor of the Capitol building. As ever, you can let us know what you thought of our conversation. Send an email or leave a voicemail. You can find all the ways to connect with us at our website, 21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with the Majority Leader of the Illinois House of Representatives, Greg Harris.
Majority Leader Greg Harris, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for coming and talking to me today.
So I want to begin by asking you, when did you first know you wanted to get into a career in politics and public service?
In the late 80s, when all my friends in Chicago suddenly started to get sick and die around me, you know, every month, more and more deaths. Yeah, I mean, politics was nothing I had ever thought of before, been interested in. But back at that time, it was the Reagan years, and you know, President Reagan would not even say the word gay. Wouldn't talk about HIV. There was very little governmental support, very little research on HIV and AIDS, and very few places for people to go who were suffering and dying. And remember, back then, it was perfectly legal for people to be fired from their jobs for being HIV positive or lose their housing. There were not laws prohibiting that. Being denied public accommodations. People were being, thrown out of families. You know, people's families were forcing them to die alone in a hospital without, you know, their lover or life partner there with them because of prejudice against gay people. So it was really a dark time. And, people like me who had never thought of doing anything before organized way in a community suddenly said, okay, well, if our friends are suffering through this, then there've got to be a lot of other people are too, and we need to find ways to find them housing and be sure they get food and find them access to health care and legal services and spiritual pastoral care. And we started organizations. You know, we just sat around kitchen tables and figured out, okay, what can we do and how do we do this? Not just for people we know, but, you know, all across Chicago, we knew there were people who really had no supports, and we had to be for them too.
You went to work for Chicago Alderman Marianne Smith for 14 years. Is that?
Well, but there was a couple years in between that. So I had been working in a job for a trade association in Chicago, which had moved down to North Carolina, which is where the industry had moved over the years. So I was at a time in my life where I was not working. You know, this outfit had moved. A bunch of us had been, you know, given severance because they didn't want to move the whole staff with us. So, you know, I had some time where I didn't have to work. And that's another reason why I was able to just spend my whole day working with people, you know, suddenly realizing for the first time all the injustice and inequity that were being heaped on people simply because of who they are, and seeing people get activated and go out into the streets and go out into political organizing, go out into community organizing for the first times in their lives just because they felt they had to do something to save their friends. And, you know, you look at what's going on now around COVID, and, you know, there are so many parallels. You know, having now gone through two plagues, and a friend of mine reminded me the other day, probably three if you count polio, because when I was a kid, you know, getting polio vaccines, people, that was a new thing. There's still a lot of lessons to learn.
You talked about getting organized and getting politically active because of the HIV crisis. And I was struck when you were appointed to the General Assembly, there were six candidates, four of them were openly gay. And I saw a quote in Windy City Times, Rick Garcia was saying how pleased and surprised he was because just 10 years earlier, when Representative Larry McKeon was up for that position, they had a hard time finding a candidate who was openly gay. Can you talk about the process of becoming politically active and finding people who are willing to put themselves forward to be candidates at that time?
At that time in that district, it was far easier than it was in the past. If you remember back in Chicago history, there was a big struggle. Dr. Ron Sable and other, he was a gay physician, had tried to run for alderman a number of times. But there was still so much president prejudice or hesitancy or whatever around electing gay people to office, which now in today's world, you look back and it, at least around my neighborhood, it seems sort of quaint because you have me, a gay state rep who happens to be the majority leader in the House of Representatives. I have a gay alderman. We have a lesbian mayor, and you can just go down the list. And you're seeing this across the state, across the United States now, where people have in a lot of ways moved on from a lot of that prejudice. There was a AP story last week on some polling that for the first time in history now, even 52% of Republicans in across America support gay marriage, and 70% of the population at large supports gay marriage. And when I was first came into the General Assembly in 2006 and decided passing gay marriage in Illinois was something I wanted to do, the support was 40%. So, I mean, this is just a massive shift of public perception and public opinion and public belief to go from 40% like 14 or 15 years ago now to over 70% acceptance.
Yeah, and you talk about how much more common it is to have elected officials. And we had State Senator Simmons, your state senator, on the show a couple weeks ago talking about a different issue. And there was a news story I read in the prep. It said he's the first openly gay state senator. And I thought, wait a minute, what about Penny Severance, for example? And then I thought, well, openly, right? Oh. And that's the question. Can you talk about, the process of, Representative McKeon is probably not the first gay state representative.
No. And you see this all over the country. You see it in Congress where, and some folks have come out over time. But, the world was a vastly different place not that many years ago where being, openly gay would have been really problematic, much less openly a person living with AIDS like I am. I mean, that's something still there's a very small handful of, HIV positive people or, PWAs who are, in elected office and talking about it. But, you talk to folks who are voters and they really are right now evaluating you for what's your position, what do they think your character is like, do they identify you and you identify with them, not your sexual orientation or gender identity.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with State Representative Greg Harris, who is the majority leader, the Democratic majority leader in the Illinois House of Representatives. We're in his suite of offices in the Illinois Capitol. You mentioned being openly HIV positive, and there was just a debate in Illinois recently about this law that passed, I believe, in 1989. We had a conversation on the show on this. We had two people who were HIV positive talking about this. And what a change since 1989. Just to remind listeners, it is still, until the governor signs it, and indications are he plans to, a crime to not disclose one's HIV status to a partner. Can you talk about the change in attitudes around HIV and maybe just the change in the biology of it in the last decades?
Sure. When HIV first started to come out, I mean, it was a lot like when we first began to learn about COVID. There was so much misinformation out there. There was a lack of education of people in the community, lack of understanding of transmission, things like that. People were afraid to shake hands or hug you. That was both for COVID and for HIV. And as we learn, as science learned more about how it was transmitted, you know, it took a while, took a long while for some people to understand, no, this is not something you're going to, you know, casually get. And of course, you know, science has advanced so rapidly. At the time, there were no drugs for people who were HIV positive. If you got sick, it was usually a death sentence through one of the opportunistic infections like PCP pneumonia or Kaposi sarcoma, some of these things that people got. And then they began to get drugs. AZT was the first drug. And I think, I'm just trying to remember, like 3-4-T, they had different names back then. And some of them were pretty rudimentary, but now science has advanced to the fact that if you're, you know, diagnosed HIV positive and you're taking your one pill a day treatment of, you know, a sort of cocktail retroviral, antiretroviral drug, not only does your disease not advance, that you are essentially unable to transmit it to other people. And, you know, it's taken this long for the law to catch up with the realities of what medicine and science tell us.
You talked about becoming politically active, though, when you saw your friends and people around you in your community dying. What was it like when you found out your diagnosis?
Oh, it was bad. I mean, there was a, you know, a lot of, you know, substance use, abuse, you know, some, you know, suicide attempts over the years. It was hard for me to cope through this. Looking back now, you know, those years seem to be sort of in the rearview mirror a long way, but it was a tough time for me. And I think it's still a tough time for a lot of people. There still is stigma and shame around being HIV positive. I saw some statistics the other day that one of the most rapidly growing demographics of people who are testing positive are youth, because the prevention messages and the education, you know, have sort of fallen away over time for different reasons. And, you know, clearly, you know, that message needs to be reminded to people.
When did you feel a light at the end of the tunnel that things were changing and maybe it wasn't? I mean, I think a lot of people felt it was a death sentence at the time. And obviously that's changed over time. You're here with us now all these decades later.
Well, yeah. And I have no idea why me. I think about that a lot. You know, at one point my doctor had said to me, well, you need to, you know, I'd caught this one infection. He said, you know, the survival rate of this is about, you know, 5%. So you should really start thinking about, you know, wrapping up your affairs and those kind of things. And then, you know, with a lot of different treatment, you know, had to be fed intravenously for months. I did survive. That still bothers me. Like, why me and why not so many other guys? I knew. But I did. And, you know, now a lot of the stuff I do is, you know, probably to pay back or in memory of a lot of those people.
I was thinking recently about the Dan Savage campaign, It Gets Better, I think. If you're familiar with this, it's about a decade ago. Yeah. He's a newspaper columnist. And this thing that he wrote turned into this sort of campaign aimed at young people in the LGBT movement. I wonder, would a young Greg Harris in the 60s or 70s have benefited from a message like It Gets Better?
Who knows? I can barely remember the 80s. Thinking back at the 60s and 70s, I don't know. But yeah, that's the other thing too, is that the one thing we learned about messaging on this is, you know, one size does not fit all. I mean, you really need, you know, culturally appropriate messages for different populations, you know, who, you know, perceive information in a different way and need it talked about in a different way. What works well in my neighborhood on the north side of Chicago may not be as good a message on the south side of Chicago or, you know, downstate in different places.
I wonder, do you feel like you serve as a sort of ambassador, or maybe more so when you came into the General Assembly back in 2006 than now, as a sort of ambassador for the LGBT community with other representatives who maybe are from areas without as many people who are out and proud, so to speak?
I'm not sure I thought of myself that way, but it certainly ended up that way. Simply just being a gay person with a seat at the table. you know, we were not talked about. We were part of the conversation for the first time. And I think that's important, you know, for, you know, all kinds of different groups. But yeah, I had a lot of interesting conversations with my colleagues who had, there were a lot of things they wanted to know about, like gay people, and I.
What's the craziest thing somebody said?
I don't even want to tell you what the craziest things are. I just really don't. But that, a lot of people, one of my colleagues said, yeah, I was really literally the first out person he had ever met. You know, he obviously is not from my neighborhood in Chicago. He's from elsewhere in the state. But which is, you know, that may be possible. Now, of course, we have a whole bunch of gay and lesbian reps. You know, we have out gay black senator who happens to be my senator. And there are a large number of elected officials in cities and towns and counties and townships, large and small, all across the state now.
Okay, we need to take a break. We're going to continue my conversation with Illinois House Majority Leader Greg Harris. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing my conversation with Illinois House Majority Leader Greg Harris of Chicago. He's the number two Democrat in the House, second only to the Speaker. Harris is also one of a growing number of openly gay politicians in Illinois, but one of just a few who are also openly HIV positive. I spoke with Harris last week in his office in the Illinois State Capitol building.
I want to ask you, there's a tendency among pundits now to look back at the change you were talking about, the sea change in public opinion on same-sex marriage. And you've been around for, you know, from as a the closet and criminality of people who are gay and lesbian in America through the HIV pandemic, through civil rights in Illinois, civil unions, same-sex marriage. You sponsored the legislation for civil unions and same-sex marriage. Do you, from the inside, what did that look like? Was the sort of people look back now and say, wow, it happened so fast. Did it feel like it was happening fast to you on the inside of those fights?
No. Every step seemed to be like clawing our way along. This is an experience, you know, talking to people around the country that they felt. But at some point, you know, as much work as we did, the groundwork we had laid and people who came before us had laid really began to pay off in how public opinion changed around us. And the thing that was sort of interesting was between the time we passed civil unions and the time we moved on to Illinois and passed marriage equality, the messaging that we were testing shifted a lot. Because earlier, you know, the successful messaging was around, you know, equal rights and equal protection under the law. And that seemed to resonate with voters the most in different polling. At some point, there was a sudden shift where that message did not resonate as well anymore. But the message that resonated all of a sudden was, why shouldn't everyone's love be treated the same way? You know, the golden rule, let's do unto others as we would like done unto us. And, you know, all folks want is to build loving families together, and who should stand in the way of that? I mean, that's a really big shift in, you know, perception on an issue.
I imagine you don't get those same questions you were talking about earlier from colleagues who have, you know, never felt like they've been in a room with somebody who is out before. To what do you attribute the change in public attitudes?
Well, I think a lot is, as you know, people in every walk of life began to come. I should just preface this. Like, when I was growing up, there was not even the word gay. There was not a word for what I was. I mean, there were some bad ones. But even finding out that there were other people like me and how to connect with them, I mean, this was really pre-internet time, like by decades. There were some bars you could go to. That was sort of the socializing place and community center where gay bars in the time. But, you know, simply the fact that now in so many ways, you know, LGBT people are, you know, integrated into everyone's life. Folks are talking about it in their workplace, about their families. They're proud of them. They have pictures on their desk. They talk, you know, neighborhoods are, you know, bond together, you know, all the different families. In church or mosque or synagogue, you know, folks are, you know, open about their sexual orientation and their families. And it's way hard, I think, for it's easy to in abstract think, oh, those gay people. But when it's people you know and people you see at work and people who are on your block and people who are in your store and people in your church that you know, and you look at them and say, you know, we just wish the best for them and want to be happy. I think just more people being out has really changed things.
When did you find your community? How did you come across that?
Moving to a big city. I grew up in small towns, and it just, you know, I could drive to Denver, you know, when I was able to drive. It was like, you know, an hour and some away. But then when I moved to Chicago, you know, I was amazed that, you know, I could walk, you know, three or four blocks from my house and find clubs and bars and stuff like that. And, you know, four and five on the same block. I had no idea that those kind of things existed.
What is the next frontier as you look at the landscape of LGBTQ rights? You've had all these victories in the past, and not you personally, but also the community, I mean. What is the next frontier in rights?
You know, I think it's making sure that, you know, every facet, you know, the LGBT community is a very big thing. There are different age groups. There are different races and ethnicities. And I think everyone experiences a relationship to the community in a different way. And to make sure that, you know, everyone is, you know, in all these different communities is respected in ways that honor them and the way they want to live their lives, I think that's really important.
Majority Leader Greg Harris, thank you for taking the time to speak with us on the 21st.
Well, thanks for having me.